Landmine contamination is a devastating legacy of warfare, affecting the lives of millions in more than 50 countries around the world. As we speak, landmines and other improvised explosive devices are widely used in Yemen, in Syria, in Libya, in North Iraq, in many parts of the developing world. My name is Ilias Papayoannou. I'm a professor of economics at the London Business School, where I serve as academic co-director of the Wheeler Institute for Business and Development. Clearing landmines not only saves lives, it has the potential to help local communities for a fast recovery. But how large are the economic benefits of clearing landmines? Which technologies can help to detect and chart landmines contamination in the most efficient and cost-saving way? You will now be hearing Paul Heslop. Paul is the Chief of Operations and Planning of the United Nations Mine Action Service. Paul, a London Business School alum, has extensive experience on landmine clearance in the developing world, as he has worked in this area for more than 20 years. He is now assisting UN peacekeeping, political and humanitarian missions across the world.
What is interesting is, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, and yet in Afghanistan now 95% of the casualties are from devices that have been used since 2012. So in 2011, when we were working on the Otter extension request for Afghanistan, we had a plan that would get Afghanistan free by 2023, and now 19 out of every 20 instances from something that wasn't in existence when we made that plan. So we've got to adjust. What we're trying to figure out is what can we be doing to make sure that we're doing the right thing and how we prioritise and how we make things work, you know, and what do we factor into this? Is it the mandate and what we're going through? Is it the mission that we're trying to support? Are we part of the protection cluster or the various other safety clusters that are out there as part of the UN system or humanitarian assistance? What are the politics? What are the donors looking at? Where are we in the life cycle of the project? Is there an actual national capacity? Is there a bilateral capacity? Can we enhance it? But a lot of it is really more than mines. And although personally I support the 2025 campaign that our colleague from HALO mentioned earlier, I still think that is a sign of how this sector has been very output driven for 25 years. And what we need to become is impact and outcome driven and understanding what it means. You know, when we talk about cost per square meter, it's an irrelevance if that meter isn't going to be used properly. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a dollar or $10,000 per square meter if there is no impact from clearing that ground or if that ground isn't contaminated. So a lot of it is about figuring out what can we do, how can we do it better. I also, in terms of the funding challenges that are out there, I don't think it's necessarily donor fatigue. I think it's that we're not actually explaining to donors what the value add of what we do is. And if we can show how we can change the way that we're prioritizing, that we can factor it in. I mean, the presentation about Mozambique, for me, is very, very relevant because that was the first ever task I did in Mine Action, was to clear the road from from Kiliman on the coast up to the Malawian border that allowed 1 million refugees to come back. And the drive that he was talking about, I did that drive. And when we first deployed teams up to Kiliman, to get to Kiliman on the coast, you had to drive up through Tet into Malawi, loop over the top, and then come back down. You know, when we cleared the road, a journey that had been taking well over a day to get from the border to the coast, we were doing in 4 hours. You know, that changes lives. So I think we need. It's strange that we go round, if I can say that. That 25 years ago, we identified that was a strategic priority for us to do in Mozambique, and yet 25 years later we're talking about how that was a strategic priority, but what have we done in the meantime? And so we've cleared hundreds of thousands of mines and explosive devices. We've changed the lives of many people. I'm one of those lucky people who gets up in the morning when I look in the mirror, usually with red eyes, I go, you know, today is going to be a great day because I know that the people I'm working with are going to make the world a slightly safer place. And I've had the privilege of all of the demining organizations I've been involved with, employing really motivated and engaged people. And it was one of the, and it's one of the great pleasures of the work I do, is the people I work with. But we are very unique in, I don't think there's many other sectors or many other parts of the world where people get up and know that they're going to consciously make a difference that day. And it's very motivational. But it's frustrating to be seeing that sometimes 25 years later, we're learning some of the lessons that we probably should have grasped a bit sooner. Again, I'm going to bang through quite quickly. I think we also need to be factoring in that things have changed now in terms of things like, is the, you know, what is stabilization? What is the humanitarian response? What is early recovery? What is development? I mean, somebody mentioned buzzwords earlier and silos, and I had to laugh because I think I've been contaminated with some of them. But again, what is effective coordination? What is, again, the real value add of what we do? How do we de-conflict to make sure the right people are in the right place at the right time doing the right thing? And again, if we get that right, and this is why I think the project that we're doing with Geneva Center on trying to improve information management and then be able to draw in from these various information sources that are out there, how we can then factor that into the prioritization process. In my action, I think from when we issue the task dossier, so when a task is given to the implementing partner, be it commercial or NGO, to the minute it's cleared, that is so well done and so nailed that we've done it. What we do after that, I mean, the fact it's taken us 25 years to recognise a road we cleared in Mozambique has had economic value to northern Mozambique and southern Mozambique, shows that perhaps we could improve the post-clearance report in an assessment. But where I think we could really improve things is at the programme design phase, where we start taking into account considerations that we maybe haven't thought of before and think, what would the potential socioeconomic impact of this be? What would this mean in terms of stabilisation? So a good example here is the Iron Bridge in Fallujah. And again, there's a good video on YouTube if you want to see this, filmed by a drone, where there was basically one device was stopping us from this bridge being rebuilt by UNDP. But that device was underwater in the span, and nobody had any underwater demining experience. We had almost none. But we came up with a concept, and we engaged with an implementing partner, and within 6 weeks, we'd removed the problem at a cost of $150,000. Now, $150,000 to clear one explosive device is quite expensive. But when you think that bridge now has 1,000 vehicles an hour going across it for 20 hours a day, what does that mean in terms of economic benefit? You know, especially if the previous bridge was 2 hours drive down the road. So how can we turn around and say, you know, so for me, that $150,000 at 150K for one device that may or may not function because it's been underwater for 3 months, but the economic impact of what we've done is huge. The other one is, again, you saw the pictures there. I mean, West Mosul was absolutely smacked. And I've personally never seen anything like it. I mean, there was layers upon layers of explosive devices, rubble, people wearing suicide vests, people who've been human shields wearing suicide vests. The work that the implementing partners and the demining organisations on the ground in Mosul and, you know, around the world is outstanding. But in terms of a technical challenge, but it's three-dimensional demining. You know, we've got to look at this in a different way. And the amounts of explosive quantity involved is massive compared to the 50 to 200 grams you've got in a traditional anti-personnel mine. So again, we've got to be innovative. We've got to be looking at it. So, you know, that drone footage of the cellist, you know, that allows us in terms of using technology to look at the problem from a different way. Is there a possible different avenue we can approach the site? Can we see any of the explosive devices there? Are there any trigger mechanisms that we could be aware of before we go on? And so, you know, again, looking at how we can use technology, what can we do? What can we make things happen? So, I mean, what we want to be doing is again, being proactive, forward-leaning, trying to not be reactive to all of these situations, to be proactive, to prevent things, to figure out on what we can do to try and understand that the environment we're working in has now changed. You know, the UN has become a target, NGOs have become a target, insurgent groups are using different techniques. And again, you know, it's not just now about chasing those last anti-personnel mines to make an Ottawa Treaty compliant. It's about trying to figure out how explosive hazards are stopping things from going on. What are the positive outcomes we're looking for and what are the negative outcomes we're trying to avoid? And then driving forward and designing programs that will be funded. Again, you know, we would not have got $75 million for Iraq last year if we had not been able to show the donors the relevance of what we were doing. But the biggest single donor to that was interested in stabilization. They weren't interested in humanitarian. They wanted to see actions that would improve stabilization and would bring in infrastructure and show real returns in that. By changing the message to the donor, we brought in another $40 million from a non-traditional mine action funding source. So again, if we can show the relevance, if we can show the impact, the type of studies that have been done, you know, in Mozambique and Cambodia, getting donors to think a little bit more about what the consequences of this is, what the positive outcomes are, you know, what is the impact from it, and stop focusing on thousands of mines or tens of millions of devices or whatever else. It's great, but it's irrelevant. You know, it's what are we doing, why are we doing it, and what is the benefit from it? Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for listening to our series on landmine contamination and clearance. From the conference that the Wheeler Institute for Business and Development organized at the London Business School on April 9, 2019. For more on this topic and impactful research and stories, please visit our website, www.london.edu/Wheeler Institute. Thank you.